Sound.
There we go. And so it's not going to say we're recording again.
Not.
Okay. This is very confusing. I may have to not allow that in the future.
Just
All right. Well, in any case, it is Tuesday, December 16th. Makes us 9 days short of Christmas, which means we'll have another chance to go Christmas shopping next Tuesday. I don't know what that means. I just work here. So we're going to meditate for about 20 minutes, and then I was going to talk about something. That I was, as I do usually, almost always. I can't think of a time I didn't. I meditate before this class. It's my own personal meditation, and was just like kind of aware of having how different it feels when I really sit up with my shoulders back a little bit, and really make a lot of space in my chest. I guess so that I get more oxygen. I'm not sure what it does, but I think it also makes energy move through the body, the spine, the whole sort of chakra system, if you will, sort of opened up. So I'm just going to recommend that this morning, that you pay particular attention to how your posture is affecting your energetic state. And then, because your energetic state has this direct connection on your emotional state. And this happens to be something that I'm trying to write about without jumping off a bridge. We'll see which happens first, finishing a book or jumping off a bridge. Maybe I'll just find like a short, not so high bridge, just one that's, a few feet off the ground that I can jump off, and then I'll do no harm, but I'll get the, experience of bridge jumping. I really shouldn't joke about that. I'm sorry. It's not really that funny. But then again, a lot of my humor isn't really funny. So there you are. So, yeah. Again, welcome everyone. And if you want to settle in to a meditation posture and whatever's comfortable, my suggestions are just suggestions. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze, turning the attention inward. I turn a little bit more toward the microphone. And the idea with this instruction about posture is not so much prescriptive as it is the invitation to explore how the way you hold your body affects mental states. This is the essential question I'm getting at. And so that can be one of the things that you observe in your meditation. Let's start first by just intentionally relaxing the body a bit. And so when we sit upright in this open way, letting go and relaxing is a kind of countervailing form of effort. Relaxing within the context of this open and erect posture. So as we find in many of the teachings and the meditation instructions, There are often these two wings or even paradoxical elements within the Dharma and within the practice. And this is one of them, being upright and in this relatively strong posture, even as we relax inside that posture. So it's the balance or the middle way of practice. Specifically, I find it helpful to check in with how I'm holding my shoulders, having a sense of releasing there. What's going on in my belly? Softening, where there's often a tightness or tension. And then loosening the jaw, where there can also be this clenching unconsciously. Those are just a few areas to notice, and you can explore the sensations of your body for yourself to see if there are other areas where there is some kind of tension or tightness or clenching. We could say this is all preparatory to meditation, but really it's part of the ongoing practice is to see how the body is being held. Tension can arise at any point, not just at the beginning. It's something to keep an eye on. Now, letting the breath become the focal point, if you haven't already. Feeling the breath either at the nostrils or the belly. Feeling meaning being in touch with the sensations. Very real experience, not conceptual. Not thinking about the breath or, observing it, but feeling it. An in-breath, an out-breath. We're doing this in this more broad context of the whole body. That the breath is a primary object of attention, but there's also a peripheral awareness of the general state of the body, the posture and balance, tension, calmness. We're also tracking restlessness and sleepiness. So the delicate process of mindfulness meditation is to really observe the ongoing processes of body and mind. And again, we have this duality between a focus on a particular thing, the breath, balanced with the broader exploring awareness. Just tracking all these other aspects of our experience. And trying to avoid like the daydreams, thoughts, dreams. This is the art of practice. This is not a technique. Something we gradually develop a sensitivity to, a touch, a feel for how to do this. We're not aiming at some concentrated state that locks out everything else. Again, this is more subtle than that. We're aware of the breath, and we are aware of body and mind. And so I will let you practice without my voice for the remaining time. All righty. Well. I forgot to look at the clock when I started the sit, so I just guessing that that was about 20 minutes. Close enough. I'm a little compulsive about my own sits. Then, okay, I started at 23 after. Let's see, 45 plus 23. Okay, I end at 58 or whatever it is. Yeah, so a few things on my mind. I guess what was kind of going through my mind as I was sitting was what it is that I offer, because I think that I guess it's because I'm wondering, like tracing back where this thought started. I got an email this morning about some workshop that I'm supposed to be part of next month, and it's about addiction and some mindfulness and addiction, and it just reminded me of how often I've sort of been mistakenly thought to be someone who would help people get sober. That's not really ever what I've been focused on. My primary interest in doing this work is helping people to deepen their recovery and to take their recovery, yeah, I mean deeper, but to work through the challenges of recovery, which sort of, in some ways is a business decision. It's not a great business decision, because it's if you want to get a lot of work, just be around to help all the people who are trying to get sober, because there are a lot more of them than there are people that are in recovery and sustained recovery. But I guess largely because of my own experience, that my life transformed when I got sober, but it kept being challenging, and it keeps being challenging today, 40 years later. And it seemed to me that, well, first of all, that I felt like the Dharma and this practice particularly, but also all the teachings of the Dharma, can really help with the continuing stages of recovery. And of course, they can be applied to the early stages and they're just getting sober. But that's just because I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was always like, well, I don't. I'm not going to make up a Buddhist recovery program that I haven't tried out for myself, and so I never felt that that was my job. And as I say, it wasn't really my interest. Frankly, working with newcomers is just brutal and agonizing. I've sponsored a few people in my life, but it was never something I felt very comfortable at, and or that I felt I was very good at. And then working in, as I have periodically, in treatment centers, seeing the rate of relapse, it's just so frustrating and painful that I really admire people who can do that work, but it's not for me. I need to work with people who are a little further along in that process. And as I say, I think there's still a lot of work that has to be done, right? It's not like, and this is another one of those illusions that things like this workshop that I'm supposed to be part of in January are promote, in a way, like you just need to get sober and then, that, like, the work is done, right? Like there's only one step. There's just step one. The other 11, you don't need them, or something. Who knows? But we know, like, that's just not, anybody who's been around for, a few years or decades knows it just doesn't work like that. And I was thinking about many different settings that I've taught in. Like, I can remember I went to Las Vegas to speak at a like a psychiatrist, psychologist conference, and like 12 people came to this huge ballroom to hear me speak because nobody cared about Buddhism and the 12 steps. And what they wanted was for me to tell them how to use Buddhism and the 12 steps to treat their clients. And I was like, I have no idea what you're supposed to do, what you can do with this. I'm not, again, not my job. I'll work with your clients, but I can't tell you how to work with you. Anyway, that was like a classic thing, and as I say, treatment centers, I would go in and, there'd be 12 people in a room, eight of them would fall asleep, two of them would walk out, and two of them would be like, wow, that was really amazing. I'd be like, okay, well, that was really enrich experience for me. Please pay me and I will leave now. And then the yoga centers, I mean, and everything from Esalen to Kripalu and Omega, where people were coming again for some kind of magic fix, the like new agey thing. And it's like, I don't do that. Like, what I do is work, and you might not really want to do work. It's challenging sitting with yourself, being with yourself. I mean, many of you guys have. Seeing a lot of faces here that have been on retreats with me, and it's hard, right? It ain't easy, and that's what it takes. When I was on the 6 week retreat at Insight Meditation Society 2 years ago, and at the end of the retreat, they put up a the last like 2 days, they're like, okay, we're going to have affinity groups. And people like put up all the things that they wanted to have an affinity group of. And I was waiting. Where's the recovery affinity group? I was like, I don't want to do it because it's going to be like, oh, Kevin Griffin, he's the Dharma and recovery guy. And finally, I was like, I got to do it. So I put my name up. And people came, not a huge, a whole lot. But most of the people who came who were dealing with recovery were hiding out at the meditation center to avoid dealing with their addiction. I hope none of them are here today and being judged. But I mean, they spoke it, that they like that they couldn't stay sober, but when they were on a retreat, they could stay sober. And they got into these states that they really liked on the retreats, like, ooh, 6 weeks of meditating, I get into these great bliss states. It's so wonderful. It's really good. Like, no, that's not recovery. Sorry, this process, it takes work. It takes honesty. It takes, a lot of willingness. I mean, I'm just quoting AA, right? Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I don't know why I felt whatever. It was just something to talk about a little bit, because I do think people still come to this thinking, oh, I'll go to Kevin Griffin's thing and it'll help me get sober. And I hope it does. Very possible it could. But coming here on Tuesday morning for an hour is definitely not a program, a program is something you live, and it's a daily thing, and an hourly thing, and a one breath at a time thing. And I hope that everybody here is enjoying and participating in such a process. So interesting. I mean, 40 years sober this past June, this week, the last 2 weeks have been some of the most difficult I've had in, not sure. It's been many years. So that happens. And I'm working with it, and I'm better today. We'll see how it is. Just interesting to see, certain resentments, that arise and how they get stuck in the mind. Some of you may be familiar with this thing, and meditating with resentments can make them worse if you're not meditating well. And that's been sort of happening that and if I told you what the resentment was, you'd probably I don't know what you would think, but in the interest of my ordinary way of being, I will tell you because it's really a tease to not tell you that. So, okay, think about this as a business proposition. I would like you to do something for me and provide me with something. And when I get it, I will decide when to use it. And I will pay you for it when I decide to use it. I won't pay you for it when you complete the project. Like, I'm on vacation and you painted my house. I'll pay you when I get back from vacation. Oh, I don't know how long I'm going to be on vacation. It might be 6 months. So that's the resentment that, and it's, toward the publishing world that, and it's not about money because it's not any, it's a trivial amount of money. But to me, it's insulting and unethical to say, give us your book, and then when we publish it, we'll pay you your advance. Because, again, as if anybody here cares, but ordinarily, it used to be when I first got published, they paid you when you gave them the product, and then they published it. But now, see, publishing is like the worst business. First of all, it's just like stuck. I don't know if they've gotten to the 20th century yet, but they're definitely not in the 21st century. It's like, oh, okay, well, if you can get it to us in the next couple of months, we'll be able to publish it 2 years from now. I'm like, oh, thanks. Anyway, that's got me going. So I'm thinking again about self-publishing because then I don't have dopes. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm not sure this belongs in any kind of a podcast. Kevin bitches about his big problem because, most writers are so happy to get a publishing contract that they're like, yay. Oh, maybe I should read it. Anyway, I should say something that's helpful to people. It's not about Kevin. Let me see. Energy. How about that? I was talking about that in the meditation, before the meditation. This is just so interesting to me how we and we don't. I don't think that Buddhist teachers, meditation teachers, teach this enough to just be aware of the energy in your body. And to see how that's affecting your mind. And to see how your mind is affecting your body, which is sort of the thing. I mean, when you have a resentment, like what it does to your body. And, I just find it so helpful when I can meditate on just how I'm feeling here. And, when I try to just like narrow my attention to my breath, it kind of feels constrictive, and it feel really what it feels like is a struggle. Like I'm fighting with my own mind, and that, when I learned to meditate, I thought that meditating was being attention aware of your breath. I thought that that was the end goal. And that when I could do that, I was succeeding. But if I wasn't doing that, I was failing. And, meditation's not black and white like that. It doesn't really work like that. The breath is just a functional tool. And when you start to connect the breath with the larger energetic system of the body, you start to see that there's this whole interactive relationship. And that the breath then functions not just as a concentration object, but as a cleansing and calming and healing tool. You know, I've been talking about this, how in Pali suttas, the Anapanasati Sutta, Anapana is breath, Sati is mindfulness, so the mindfulness of breathing sutta. The pana is the same word as the Sanskrit prana. And prana, I actually like looked this up the other day because I knew what I knew, thought I knew, but confirming, it essentially means a life force. And so when we're being mindful of the breath, we're not just trying to concentrate on the breath. We're actually using awareness of the breath as a healing energy, connecting with it on this level. Now, that becomes very tempting to try to control the breath, to use it to then, you know, do something with my life force. So I think you have to be careful not to get too manipulative or sort of turning it into a system that you're trying to, that we're going to do this and this and this with the breath. And of course, with pranayama, that's part of what is done with pranayama, and that has a value, absolutely. But if you're going to sit and meditate for, you know, extended periods, and you're practicing mindfulness meditation, which is not about manipulating our experience, but more observing our experience and seeing the interactive elements of our experience, then we're less kind of hands-on with the breath, trying to control it. But we can start to see how it's affecting us, and we can subtly use it to release tension, to arouse energy, to brighten the mind, to cleanse the mind. But again, what's key behind that is, what is the motivation? What am I trying to accomplish right now? Because as soon as you're trying to get to some goal, then you have desire happening or aversion happening, and that's a hindrance. And so there's this trick. I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's like, how do I practice right effort and engage with awareness and even using the breath in this healing way without trying to make it, fighting, you know, jumping in and trying to control it? And there is no answer to that question. Can only be known in real time in the midst of the process. So that's where mindfulness is key to this. There must be mindfulness along with the effort. And then when they work together, then you can make effort kind of leaning in, but not grasping. You can point the mind somewhere towards calming or cleansing or brightening, but not, again, grasping or charging at that thing. You know, and what we could say is that we have to keep in mind that right intention begins with letting go. The English term that Bhikkhu Bodhi uses is renunciation, which is a little bit more intense, somehow sort of seems to point toward asceticism. But it's really talking about non-clinging or letting go. And so there's this tension I mean, this, already talked about this in the guided meditation, and there's this tension between effort and intention, that our effort has to be an effort to let go, which doesn't sound like an effort at all, right? How do you try to not try, And again, there's no answer to that. But what we discover in meditation is the subtle ways of dancing with this. And we can, this is one of the reasons why it's so important to practice and to practice and to practice, to do it on a regular basis. And practice in different mind states. Practice when you don't feel like practicing. Practice when you feel like you're just blissing out. Practice day after day. Go on retreat and start to experience all the complexities and subtleties and dance with it and experiment with it and see if you can sort of find your way in. And then each time you sit down to meditate, you're sitting down. You're meditating with a different mind, which means that you can take all the, skills and knowledge and experience you have from the past and discover, oh, it doesn't work with this new mind. I have to find it. I have to approach this afresh. I have to, I'm going to bring along those tools, but I'm going to also keep an open mind, like, what might I need right now? It's a strange thing that everything is constantly changing. It does make life, it certainly makes life not interesting and not boring, although it can also be boring, but it means that we never quite have the answers. And we see people all the time who seem to have arrived at success or the answer or whatever. And then if you keep watching, you see that it changes, I mean, success is one of the worst things to have happen. Because what comes after that? There can failure. It's the behind the music, theme, right? So yeah, I like to, I started by saying, talking about energy, and the reason I talk about that is because when we talk about the body as energy, or we talk about our meditative experiences as paying attention to our energetic state, it takes us out of the intellectual, out of the cognitive, out of the verbal way of engaging with our experience, and keeps us on this experiential level, which requires that we respond to it experientially. If we respond to the energetic experience with thoughts, we kind of lose it. And now what we've done is put a barrier between the experience and the awareness. There's the experience and there's the awareness, and that's what we're trying to work with. But when we start to think, then our awareness is only seeing the thing through the lens of the words and the ideas that we have. And that's already wrong because it's just an idea. It's not real. And so this challenge is to always just stay with the what it is, what it is, what it is. That Ajahn Sumedho famously, his teaching, when you're dealing with anything that's happening, is just to realize it's like this. And that's the end of what he teaches on it. He doesn't try to. So this, that's the end of the words. It's like this. Oh, what is it? What is it? It's just this. And that's where, if we're talking about like a goal in meditation, there's the goal is to become fully enlightened. But in some sense, this is kind of where we're pointing at. And I think that the meditation instructions so often throw us off from that, because it's like, pay attention to your breath, and when your mind wanders, come back to the breath. Oh, so that means I'm supposed to stop thinking, and thoughts are bad, and I'm supposed to just feel my breath. And then I'm just in this ping pong match between my thoughts and my breath, and I'm never experiencing the whole of the thing of this, just this. So just as I talk about this, I think it becomes apparent why meditation teachers don't try to teach this as the introduction, because it doesn't make any sense until you've sat for a while. Which is again why I like to work with people who have some experience. Although I work with newcomers to meditation, just not newcomers to sobriety. Bless you, bless them all. And so I've managed to fill up some time with words, and I hope that was of some value. So thanks for listening, and forgive my indulgence in my resentments, and I hope you've forgotten all about that. Think we're going to have to delete this recording too. And somebody else recorded it. That's terrible. They're going to blackmail me. Okay. Anybody wants to chime in? And just a reminder for people in the Bay Area, this weekend, this Sunday, I'm at Spirit Rock from like 10 to 4:30 for my annual Keep Coming Back Dharma Recovery and Renewal day-long retreat. So I hope people will come out. I only get to go out there twice a year at this point, and so it's fun to see people in body in person. So thank you very much. Okay, Forrest, go for it.
Yeah, Kevin. When you began the talk, you were talking about on retreat, people that identify with addiction and recovery, really seeking that blissful state. I think I'm going back when I read your book, and identify that with 12, even more contemporary. I feel like in my own practice, I've become better of when experience the feeling tone of unpleasant, of observing that and what it feels like. When I have the experience of pleasant, and I'm grateful that in my practice now, I've trained my mind where I can access my through the awareness of breath, my mind does settle and it does provide this kind of blissful state. And I've been just noticing more recently that when I have that, I tend to just kind of let go into it and become want to be part of it and end up crave it. And I'm more trying to even, they're basically, I look at it as different sides of the same coin. And so even when I'm having that pleasant experience, also just having that awareness. And I have a time phrasing it. I don't want to say that it's objective or detached from it, but be able to be mindful and observe it. And the same level I do when I'm having the unpleasant.
Well, as I was trained in absorption practices, the suggestion is that when you start to have a pleasant experience, that you really kind of dive into it, and try to get absorbed into the pleasant feeling. But because I tend towards unpleasant states, in that process, I also learned to become absorbed into unpleasant states. And in fact, they all just wind up the same place. Absorption is absorption, whether it's through the door of pleasant or through the door of unpleasant. And that can be, valuable. And particularly, with the unpleasant, it's actually a way to transform it somewhat. And basically what it means is accepting it, right? It's accepting the unpleasant, not fighting with it, but just being with it. It's like this. It just feels like this, and just feeling it and letting it be there. It's quite remarkable that a lot of things that are painful are more painful because of our mental resistance to them. And when that resistance falls away, a great deal of the pain, and sometimes all of the pain, falls away. That takes a lot of practice, but that's an interesting process for me. There's a there's a bias toward the pleasant in meditation and in meditation teachings, and it's in the seven factors of awakening, the one, two, three, fourth factor is joy, but that's just a translation of a word that I don't think actually refers to happiness. I think it refers to the energetic state, to an energetic state, which I think is emotionally neutral. It's just pleasant. And so because it's pleasant, we think that it's happiness. But anyway, I may be getting a little too deep into something that I'm not ready to, complete anyway. Susan, I saw your hand up originally, Susan L, if you wanted to join in.
Hi, Kevin. Sorry.
Oh,
Thank you.
yeah.
I just had a quick question. Thank you very much. This is the first time I've been to this meeting, and it was really light, nice. And I like the way you started it with your own, just your own humanity. I just had a quick logistic question because I had been at your meeting on Friday, and you said that the Sunday, workshop or might be offered online.
Oh yeah.
And I tried to register, and it doesn't look like. I was just wondering if that is going to change or if that's just going to be in person.
Really good question. And at this point, I simply don't know. I
Okay.
don't. Last year, it was hybrid. So yeah, so we did both. I don't know what the story is for this year. And you said you went to it
I
and
went on this morning and I
on
couldn't, it
and
looked like it was just on land. So I wasn't sure if they're going to update it or change it or if that's just what they were doing or you were doing.
I mean, if that's what they're saying, that I've got to assume that's what it is. I don't know why they would do that,
Okay.
but I have very little influence over what Spirit Rock does anymore. They used to listen to me, but not anymore.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. The guidance and the talk.
Thanks. Yeah. Other comments, thoughts, questions? We got, it says 10:59 on my little computer clock here. John, hello.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Good, me too. And I really appreciated the distinction you made. I didn't put my teeth in, just you may not have noticed, but if you do, I look older today. Self-consciousness, right? The distinction between this is work versus this kind of magical thinking that happens in all kinds of spiritual traditions, right? So Buddhism is not an exemption from that, right? But so the tenor of this meeting for me, especially just today, where it was so much richer. I sat in on another meeting last night, and there was all kinds of talk about space and solstice and Not to belittle that, but it didn't have the same urgency for me that I used to try to change my feelings, right? That's what my addiction was all about.
Yeah,
Instead
absolutely.
of trying to change anything, I feel called to create something. And it's got to be something real. So if I'm experiencing, in a meditation, hypothetically, I could contemplate what is it to experience, right? I mean, this is the existentialist, essence of what it means to be human in a world that is empirical and real. And perhaps all the stuff I've been sold about Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or whatever, Jainism, it's all really right here all the time. And if I tap into what is essentially real, where I always ran from through addiction because it was painful, because it involved work. But guess what? It's also where the miracle happened for me, is in stopping running and sitting with it, observing it, accepting it, working with it. And so, the tenor of what you bring, resentments and all, Kevin, I consider sheer gifts. So thank you,
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. All right, folks. Well, thanks for the reminder about the solstice. It's also my mother's birthday. My late, very late mother, 25 years she's been gone. But I, can't help but think, about her on that day. That'll be Sunday, as I said. What else? Anything else coming up? We put the retreat in there. I understand that the retreat is almost full, so in Redwood Glen. So if you are interested, probably should get on that. Some other things are coming up in the new year that you'll hear about, but nothing that, fancy or that you have to get if you're, wanting to come to an event. You'll have plenty of time for that. I try to keep myself moderately busy as an old person who needs lots of rest. I will see you all again next week. So that's once more. I don't know why it matters. It's like, Christmas. I mean, whatever. Don't drink or use, no matter what. This is a time of year when that can be particularly tempting or challenging. So lots of connection, I think, is the most important thing now. Lots of being with like-minded people, sober people, Buddhist people, wholesome people. So peace. Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye, Kevin. Thank
Bye.
you.
Thanks, Monica. I have to get on the getting everything onto YouTube. I might do that today. In the next couple of days, I will get that going. Yeah, thanks.